It's Monday of the fourth week in Lent. Welcome to today's Lentcast. This is Father John Zollsdorf. Today's Roman station is Santi Quattro Coronati, the four holy crowned martyrs, with the collect church at the nearby Santo Stefano Rotondo on the Caelian Hill. For centuries, traditions about these martyrs became tangled. Three groups from the persecution of Diocletian around 303 to 306 were linked to this church on the slope between the Colosseum and the Lateran. I used to walk past it every day on my way to school. One group was four soldiers killed for refusing pagan worship. Another group was buried out on the Via Labicana, and a third group were five stonemasons from Pannonia executed for refusing to carve an image of Asclepius. That's the god of healing associated with the Tiber Island and the Hippocratic Oath and so forth. The church may take its name from a Roman military crown. Its tower is among the oldest surviving in Rome. A titulus was here by 595 in the time of Gregory the Great, though the basilica itself seems to date from about 630. Parts of a 4th century hall with an apse belonged to the earliest structure, and in the mid-9th century, Leo IV restored the church and placed relics of the martyrs in the crypt, including those of the four soldiers and five stonemasons. After destruction in the Norman invasion, Paschal II rebuilt it, and it was consecrated in 1116. Later restorations followed, and in 1560, Augustinian nuns took possession, and they still have it, they're still there. The crypt still preserves tombs of the ancient martyrs. Off the second courtyard, however, the chapel of St. Sylvester contains a splendid 13th century fresco about Constantine's conversion, inspired by the golden legend. From a 1986 radio broadcast in Bavaria by Joseph Ratzinger. At the Last Supper, the Lord described the mission of the Holy Spirit in these words: He will guide you into all the truth, for he will not speak on his own, but will speak whatever he hears, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. Thus depicted, the Spirit becomes an icon of the church. By describing him in this way, the Lord clarifies the nature of the church and how she must live to be herself. Christian speech and action are expressed in this way. One must never be just on one's own. To become a Christian means to open oneself to receive the whole church, or, better, to let oneself be received heart, mind, and soul into the church. When I speak, think, or act as a Christian, I do it always in union with the whole church and in the grace of that union. This is how the Spirit communicates himself to us and how we communicate ourselves to one another. We communicate externally with one another only when we have previously done so internally, when we have made great progress interiorly, when we are open and large-hearted, when we have taken the other to ourselves by sharing with him our faith and our love, so that we are never henceforth on our own, but our whole being is stamped by this sharing. Speech of this kind, that comes not on our own, but from what has been heard and received, may at first glance seem to be an obstacle to the originality of the individual. It is indeed such an obstacle when originality is just the self-glorification of an individual who seeks to make of himself a kind of divinity. But knowledge of the truth and progress in it are certainly not an obstacle to the right kind of thinking. It is precisely in this way that the Holy Spirit leads us into the fullness of the truth, of the many things that Jesus has yet to tell us, and precisely in this way, too, that he declares the things that are to come. We do not receive new knowledge by isolating the truth. Truth reveals itself only when we share the thinking of those who have gone before us. The greatness of an individual depends on the measure of his ability to share. Only by becoming small, by becoming part of the whole, does he become great.